Fran. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Anne, for that announcement. And my sobriety date is October 24th, 1998, and my home group is the Midtown group, which we meet now in Bethesda. We've moved around a bit. So I just really liked hearing that, you know, about what you were just reading, because I was, you know, raised in AA to believe that, you know, that, you know, respect the meeting place. And it's not about, you know, like you said, it's not a like rules or controlling. It's just about common courtesy and respecting the thing that has given me my life back, which you know, I certainly hope that I can convey that to you. And more importantly, try to convey that throughout my in my life, because, you know, it's certainly easy to come up for an hour and say what you, you know, look good and sound right and have on your AA face, but, you know, it's in my home and in my job and with my family and with my friends that I need to, you know, really carry this out. And so I'm supposed to tell you a little bit about, you know, what it was like for me drinking, what happened, and what it's like today. And I grew up in a sober alcoholic home. My dad got sober when I was a year and a half. And so that was definitely challenging for a young budding alcoholic, because we didn't have any alcohol in the house, and drinking was really frowned upon, and dad used to beat us, and dad used to lock mom in the room and not let her out and tell us she's mine, not yours, to the kids. And, you know, and I, of course, had no recollection of any of that because I was just a baby. And but most of my siblings didn't drink. Most of my siblings were really boring. I was the youngest of seven, and all my sisters were really boring, but I had one sister who was a lot of fun. And we would kind of talk about the others, you know, like, they're square, you know, they don't really know what life's all about. You know, they don't really know how to have a good time. You know, they're the good kids or whatever. And I remember I was like 11 years old, and I was visiting my brother at University of Pennsylvania, where he was at school, and my siblings were arguing over whether or not they were going to allow me to drink, you know, and my alcoholic sibling was really rooting for me, you know, just let her loose, you know, she's just all uptight, and she's not having a good time, just let her have some drinks. And my other sisters, Al-Anonic sisters, were there, no, don't let her drink, you know, that's terrible. And I remember my brother looked at me and he said, "Do you smell that?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "That is marijuana smoke. And if you ever smell that anywhere, get out immediately." You know, so that was kind of like the extremities that were in my family, like the people that were really afraid of drinking and partying and things like that, and then people that were like abandoning themselves to it and just having a good time. I'm a little bit that's better. I was like, and so it looked a lot more attractive to me to do what my sister was doing. You know, even though she got in a lot of trouble and she dropped out of college and she ran off, her story is much more a better alcoholic story than mine. Married a guy from the Navy, you know, that she met in a bar in Boone, North Carolina, and like left Maryland, and you know, at 19, and just, you know, kind of like disowned my family, and you guys don't understand, you know. And my parents, of course, were just distraught, begging her to reconsider. And my parents raised me by, you know, really strict, you know, Christian rules and you know, not just rules, but, you know, beliefs and a system that, you know, works really well for a lot of people. But for me, I couldn't adopt it. You know, I just thought, oh gosh, you know, I went to school and they told me, even if you think about it, that's a sin. You know, if I already thought about it, I might as well do it and have fun, you know. It's like, what's the point, you know? And I just was always getting into trouble, and the nuns had nicknames for me, like Francis the Fibber was one of them. And Francis the Fibber, what fib are you going to tell today, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And that was even before I even took a drink of alcohol. I was not, you know, like an upright student and person, and just all of a sudden I took a drink of alcohol and I turned into a wild banshee. I kind of was already on that path, and alcohol just helped it along. And my parents are from Cuba, and so they didn't really know the customs here as much. And my sister took me to the beach week, you know, the senior, when she was in high school, beach week, and I was like 11. And my mom thought, oh, that's nice. Yes, go to the beach with your sister. Oh, okay. You know, like, she had no idea what it was. And, you know, and I, that was, you know, I think I had taken a drink of alcohol prior to that, but that was the first time that I took a drink of alcohol, and it did something for me, you know. And sitting around a little group, a little party, and with all kinds of illegal things going on in the house, and all I knew was that my sister didn't like the taste of beer, so she would take a sip and give it to me. And she'd drink just the neck and give it to me. And, you know, and she had given them to me, you know, 3 or 4 times now, and I had quite a good buzz going for an 11-year-old. And everybody thought it was so cute, you know, this girl is drinking. And, you know, and that first night I didn't have any consequences of my drinking. The cops came and busted up the party. But we were fine, you know, we just ran away. And, you know, I was kind of confronting people on the streets of Ocean City, you know, yelling at, you know, strange men and that I was going to beat them up. And I don't know, I really, alcohol did something for me that I did not have on my own. It gave me this kind of false courage and pride, and I always felt so less than and so different than. And when I took that drink, it really just did so much for me. And, you know, other people weren't so amused by it, but I thought it was great, you know. And my sister got in, you know, lots of trouble for that, and by my other siblings, and, you know, of course, we couldn't really, you know, do it again, kind of a thing. But I wasn't able to get alcohol, like, every day. Like I said, I had no alcohol in my environment. But every chance I got, you know, it was like moths to the flame. I was, you know, just, you know, and I didn't know that I had an obsession. I didn't know that. I just thought, it's fun, you know, it's great. You know, people that drink are fun. People that don't drink are boring, you know, and that's just the fact, you know. And I was, you know, I thought, you know, I was self-centered. I had all the characteristics of alcoholic, you know, from a young age. And I drank pretty much with impunity in my high school years, just getting away with it. And I got caught for certain things, and, you know, I would get, you know, grounded, and I would get talked to, and I would get the hairy eyeballed look a lot from my parents. And but it didn't really affect me. I just thought, they don't understand, you know, what it's like. They don't know how hard it is, you know. I had it so easy, you know. I don't know what I was stressed about, let me just tell you. You know, I had no problems, you know, but I ended up in, well, that's not necessarily true. I was abused, you know, and by my brother-in-law when I was like 13 or 14, and that really changed a lot of my drinking. I wasn't drinking so much now to have fun. I was more just like drinking to just escape or like numb out. And, you know, I saw therapists, and I tried, you know, religion. I tried really going back to the religion that I was raised with and praying. And I don't know how many times I got saved, you know, thinking that, you know, this time I'm really saved. Or, you know, thinking that it happens more than one, you know, just like people would be like, no, it's just a one-time thing. No, you don't understand. Like, I really need it again, you know. Well, and, you know, you know, alcohol started dictating all my decisions, who I was friends with, you know, where I would go, where I wouldn't go, you know, where I went to college. I mean, I wasn't, I wasn't like a genius or anything, but I was a really pretty intelligent person, and, you know, I did really pretty well in school, but I only applied to one college, you know, St. Mary's College in Southern Maryland, and that was, you know, definitely an alcoholic decision. One, because I didn't want to fill out any more applications. Two, you know, it was cheap, and my dad was happy about that because, you know, I wouldn't be on my back. And three, there's nothing to do there but drink, you know. But, you know, I had a couple scares with drinking, and I went away to college, and I made my first, like, pledge, like, I'm not going to drink, you know. I don't need it. Thank you very much, you know. And I spent like the first week where normally people are getting to know people in the college and, you know, really just having a good time. And I spent that first week like locked in my room and scared to death and just terrified, you know, of everybody and everything. And I was certain that something bad was going to happen to me. And, you know, and again, I was like, I can't drink. Bad things happen when I drink. And, you know, and luckily somebody did a good thing for me. You know, he offered me a drink. I took that drink, and I took that guy, and we had a great time, you know, and he became my boyfriend, and I became his lush, you know, girlfriend, and I didn't do anything. I didn't make any friends. All I did was hang out with this guy and just leech onto him and get all my needs met from him, all my insecurities and everything. I would try to just put on him. And, you know, meanwhile, I was just drinking. And, you know, and people would invite me places, and I would just say, oh, you know, thank you, but no, you know, I'm busy. Or, you know, I was terrified of people and of life. And alcohol just kind of changed that for me. It made me feel kind of, it made me feel in control. You know, and you tell a non-alcoholic that, and they will look at you like, what are you talking about? Because, you know, I just felt so uncomfortable. And there's a moment, you know, there's a part of Bill's story where he talks about, you know, I had arrived. And that moment came to me, you know, in that scene, in that college scene, and I was wearing the right outfit, and I was dating the right guy, and I was just looking around the room, and I just thought, you know, I'm the best, you know, and this is great, you know, and all the women are jealous of me, and all the men want me, and that's all I care about, you know, and it's just, you know, to be raised the way I was raised, and to have that be my moment of I had arrived is embarrassing, actually, to me. I'm not proud of that, you know. It's like, about as deep as a puddle, you know, and really shallow, and really, it's, you know, totally, all I cared about was appearances, and, you know, I could care less about anyone but myself and what I was getting out of life. And I'd like to say that I got sober because, you know, I got arrested, or, you know, I got put in the nut ward, or something, you know, dramatic happening, but the reality was is that people were just, didn't want anything to do with me anymore. You know, that guy dumped me, and then I found another guy that was the one, and, you know, and I held on to that for a year, and then he didn't want to have anything to do with me, and I became a charity case. You know, I became a hanger-on, and, you know, people would just kind of, like, I felt like I had to pay people, you know, to hang out with me. I felt so low. I felt like scum. I felt like below scum. You know, I felt just terrible, and a couple things, you know, times, like, when drinking, I would think, maybe it's my drinking, and, you know, but I always blamed other people. I thought, no, it's his fault. You know, if he only loved me more, then I wouldn't be this way. Or, you know, if I hadn't been abused when I was a child, you know, I wouldn't have turned out this way. And, you know, and let me just get drunk and tell you my sad story, you know. And it's everybody else's fault. It's the whole world's fault, you know. And I didn't lose that into sobriety right away, you know, like that mentality. I just broke, like, you know, I just became this, like, broken shell, and I had nothing. Like, I was an artist, and I was a singer, and I had all these talents, and it was just like everything was, like, thrown away in the toilet, you know. And I'm the kind of person that, you know, I work hard and I play hard, so nobody really knew, you know, because I was pulling still like a 3.0, and, you know, I would show up to class, you know, and stuff like that, but I would do all my work, and then I would just drink all that's much, you know. And, you know, my sister taught me that, you know, if you work hard, nobody will question your drinking, you know. And my dad was like that too. When he got sober, he was like, he had 2 jobs, 7 kids, you know, like, it wasn't like, you know, the alcoholics in my family are quote-unquote functional, you know. I don't know. All I know is that is the easy way to die of alcoholism, because nobody is there to say, to pull the plug on your drinking and say, hey, you know, you're a mess, you know. And I only surrounded myself with people who were a mess. So what were they going to say? But I did start mentioning things to my therapist at the time, because I always had a therapist, because I was always troubled. She was like, maybe you need to go to AA or NA or something. You know, and I was like, oh, no, it's not that bad, you know, please. And if I would tell my friends the truth, they didn't want to hear the truth. They just wanted to have a good time, you know. They were fair weather friends, like it says in our book. And they would say, "Oh, you're fine. I drank more than you last night," or, you know, whatever. And I wouldn't tell them, you know, how much I really drank. And I started doing these tricks, you know, like counting my drinks at parties and only drinking. You know, our book has a whole description of, like, drinking, staying off of hard liquor and only drinking beer or wine. And I would, like, not drink beer because then I would throw up. So I only drink hard liquor. Like, don't mix that with this. And don't, you know, and I would try to find this perfect combination. And, you know, and always, like, no matter, even if I never could get to that, like, place again where I felt like I was on top of the world. You know, I just, no matter what I tried, what combinations and what group of things, and, you know, I just, as long as I was satisfied, that's all I cared about. But every morning I would wake up with, you know, and it says it in here. I think I can quote this one without looking it up, but, you know, I would wake up with the terrible four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. And it says that, you know, in our chapter, A Vision for You. And I would wake up like that every morning, no matter what I had drank the night before. Even if I had drank, if I hadn't drank, you know, I would wake up that day, every day, I would wake up with that, you know, feeling of panic, like something terrible is going to happen. You know, and I was right, something terrible was happening, but, you know, I just couldn't, you know, pull myself out of it. And made another solemn vow, no more drinking, no more drugs, no more nothing, you know, and I wasn't able to live up to it, and, you know, I didn't know, like, what to do. And this is a chapter, this is a paragraph from Bill's story that I really relate to. It says, "No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master." And that was exactly what happened to me. I literally, I can picture myself, like, on the floor where I was living, just crawling around, like, sobbing hysterically, like, not knowing which direction to turn, and not having any answer anymore. And alcohol, like, you know, ceased to be, you know, a luxury. It was like I needed it, you know. And I finally called the lady that I was seeing, the therapist, and she was like, just go to a meeting. You know, you don't have, you know, I don't remember what she told me, but she convinced me somehow to go to a meeting. And I don't know why, but this is where I know this is what happened. You know, I think the what happened part of everybody's story is where God's grace can come in and just intervene. And for me, it came in the form of a yellow pages, you know. Like, I just started looking through the yellow pages, and I looked up AA, and I didn't know that AA was in the yellow pages. Nobody told me, go look in the yellow pages, you'll find AA there, you know. But I just looked it up, and I found it, and I called the hotline, and a person answered the phone. And this is Southern Maryland. I mean, the meetings are, like, not, the fellowship is not huge there, you know, but there was a live person on that phone. And I think if it was a recording, I don't know if I would have gotten to a meeting that night, because, you know, it's different when, you know, you hear another alcoholic and they're like, oh, hi, you know, they know. It's like, yep, there's a meeting tonight, and if they wait tomorrow, they might not get you, you know. Like, that, God's grace can come into that window, but that window sometimes shuts, you know. And then, you know, oh, I was just overreacting, or whatever rationalizations that my sick thinking comes up with. And I went to this meeting, and my experience was that I fell in love with AA. You know, AA was like the safe haven. You know, I looked around, I felt I had nothing in common with these people. I was easily, you know, 20 years older than the majority of the people in the room. I mean, 20 years younger than the majority of the people in the room. But I felt something there, you know, and I, like, what I know today is the language of the heart, you know, and that I identified in the meeting, and the woman passing out chips said, you know, she was got to 30 days, and she said, 30 days, 1,000 nights. And I thought, wow, she knows what it's like to not drink. Because to me, I couldn't go 30 days without drinking. You know, I had tried the last go-around, I had tried, and I made it like four days, you know, and I couldn't make it any longer. And I was, like, pathetic. I mean, sometimes I wish that my home group now, that I had come into my home group now, because, I had a couple months when I came to my home group now, and I think they didn't even know what I really looked like when I came in, you know. I was, like, a mess. I had, like, a shaved head and blue hair and eye makeup probably falling down my cheeks and this crazy outfit, and, you know, and just thinking that I had it all together. You know, I was really, really hot, you know, really cool. And people probably were like, whoa. And my first sponsor told me that I was like an alley cat that she had, you know, rescued, like a, you know, a stray. And I got that first sponsor like 5 days into going into meetings, and I wasn't going to ask anybody because, you know, my pride is in reverse. It's like, I'm not good enough. And And that pride wouldn't have allowed me to ask somebody to sponsor me. But she came up to me. She said, "Do you need a temporary sponsor?" And I knew I needed help. So I was like, "Yes, I do." And she just kind of scooped me up. And she wasn't very, she wasn't like the sponsor I have today that kind of is a little bit more strict with me. She was really like coddling and maternal and like, "Oh, it's going to be okay." And, but she read me the book. You know, we worked the steps. And she was the only woman, I guess because her children were grown, that went to meetings there every night. Because most of the women there were still had children or, you know, would only go to like one or two meetings a week. And I really needed to see somebody at meetings every day. Because I was, there was always some kind of drama going on, you know. And I told her, like, I went, my first day at the meeting, I came home and I went to my boyfriend at the time's house and I told him, "I can't see you anymore. I'm an alcoholic. So are you. And this is not going to work," you know. And he was all upset. And, you know, I just, that's how I just was very dramatic, you know. And but that, and looking back, that was a miracle because, I don't know, that was the hand of God in my life because I would not have ended that relationship. I would have held on until, I would have put claw marks into that one until, you know. And it's for so, and I've seen people come in, "Oh, I don't want to let go of my relationship with the person that, you know, is my best drinking buddy, you know." As I already have to lose my best friend to alcohol, like, "What are you going to do to me?" You know. And yeah, that didn't happen. That didn't work out. Thank God. So I had nothing, literally. So I had a lot of time to focus on AA. So I went to like 20 meetings a week, and nobody told me to do that, and I just got every service position I could. And again, nobody, my sponsor probably said, "Well, you can get service," or, you know, she probably meant like one or two service commitments a week. I was coffee maker at every meeting. I was greeting every meeting. I was doing, like, I was so crazy that I thought, I understood when people said, if you put as much energy into AA as you did into your drinking, you know, you're going to get better. And I could understand that. And, you know, if you drank or thought about drinking every day, then you need to come to a meeting every day. And So I could hold on to that stuff. And all those little sayings, like, keep coming back and, you know, letting it go. And all those things helped me. I didn't know what an alcoholic was when I came to AA. I thought alcoholic was, you know, the guy with the trench coat under the bridge. But I thought maybe you guys would let me stay here, you know, if I just kind of went along with the game, you know. Maybe they won't know, notice that I'm not really like them, you know. But the more I stayed, the more I was like you. And the more I listened in meetings, the more I identified. And I like when people say that I caught alcoholism in AA because, you know, I understood when people were talking about that, and especially the literature when it talks about that, those weird mental blank spots when, because I couldn't even describe, like, I thought, well, yeah, I said I was going to drink, and then nothing, I don't know what happened in here, and then I was drinking, and it's like, I couldn't explain that, but when I read it in the book, you know, I knew that that was what I had, you know, and I kind of always had that in the back of my mind, because my father was sober in AA. You know, I would read little statistics like, if you drink before the age of 14 and you have a parent alcoholic, you have an 80% chance of being alcoholic. You know, and I would hold on to things like that. And I'd try to prove it wrong. I'd be like, no, you know. And I thought an alcoholic also was somebody who couldn't drink, like, without having, like, because I could drink a lot, you know, and I thought that was good, you know. And I didn't understand, like, alcoholic, that's like an allergy that I have, that I like crave more alcohol, and the reason why I keep drinking is because my body is craving it. Like, I wouldn't have thought that at all. I just thought, well, I can hold a lot of liquor. I can control it. You know, you all have a problem over there that are like taking your clothes off, but I'm okay because I'm over here and I'm just like quietly killing myself in the corner and, you know, people aren't noticing. So, you know, I started relating in to, you know, what it is to be an alcoholic. And And I'm so grateful for the big book and for sponsors. And, you know, I started listening to certain things that just helped me a lot. Like, I started listening to the Joe and Charlie big book study tapes, you know, and things like that. And I became a member of my home group now when I had about 2 months. And, you know, not that my sponsor in St. Mary's was better or anything. She helped me so much. But, you know, I needed that more structure, I think, you know. And where I got sober, there wasn't a lot of, I think there was a lot of focus on recovery, you know, but at my age, I needed more like things to do, you know, because I was just like nuts, you know. So my home group, you know, is a young people's group, so there was stuff going on. There were people going to the beach. There was something attractive there. And that really helped me out because I thought, oh, now I'm sober. I'm going to be miserable for the rest of my life, and I'm not going to have any fun. And that wasn't true at all. I had more fun sober, you know, than I ever had drinking, because drinking, it was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go there, you know, and it was like, you know, I'm sitting on my ass doing nothing, excuse me. You know, like, it's not happening. And I guess, you know, what happened in my sobriety was that I just gradually, I think I've just been a lot of grace, because I'm a very stubborn person, you know. I have this, like, pride that tells me that I'm better than everyone else, but at the same time, it tells me that I'm less than, you know. And so it was hard for me to just be one with people in AA. Like, I would spend time away at school in St. Mary's, and I would think, oh, I'm better than these people, and I know more than they do. And then I would, you know, but at the same time, feel like I couldn't approach anyone, you know, and feel, like, really isolated and lonely. And I loved, you know, going to meetings where people were talking about the big book and the steps, you know, and I didn't understand, like, why I didn't like a meeting until, like, a little bit into it, like, well, maybe people were just whining or complaining and not really focusing on the steps or recovery, and, you know, and I started learning the difference between, like, a meeting that participates with traditions and a meeting that doesn't, and, you know, and my sponsor, actually down at St. Mary's, my grand sponsor, I used to raise my hand and say, oh, such and such meeting needs support. It's dying, and we need more people to go. And after the meeting, she pulled me aside, and she said, Fran, AA is like a self-cleaning oven. The meetings that don't participate by the traditions die, you know, and there's a reason for that. And I thought, man, that's so harsh. You know, so mean. It's a meeting, you know, people need that, you know, and I didn't know that AA is not the meeting, you know, that AA is much bigger than that, you know, and that there are, like your announcement says, like there are, you know, traditions and some structure here that has worked for so many people for so long, you know, and why would I want to change that? And I've been able to, I guess, I don't know, I've been able to live. I feel like I've grown up in AA, definitely. I mean, I was 19 when I got sober, but that alone, like, I definitely did not have an adult mentality when I came in. And today, still, I can, you know, really be a big baby, you know, and want my way. But I could say, like, I have had this great life in AA, and I have, you know, on the outside. Like, I finished college, and I, you know, got married, and I got a master's degree, and I, you know, work in a profession that, you know, is what, a profession that has to do with art, which I love, and, you know, and things like that. But more importantly, I feel like what's happened on the inside is and still happening, you know, on the inside is more important for me to give credit to AA for. Because, like I said, those outside things could have still happened, but without sobriety, I would have missed it, you know. And I think what's helped me the most that I haven't really done a lot of is working with others, because, you know, I worked with my sponsor and worked through the steps and did my 4-step and 5-step, but, you know, part of my selfishness is that I don't, like, really want to give people my time, you know. And to work with others, you know, you really have to give people your time, and I feel like I spent a lot of time in AA trying to get what I wanted out of life instead of trying to help somebody else, you know, get sober and get what they needed. But you know, it's been like, when I look back, in spite of myself, God has always put people in my life right when I needed it the most. You know, especially in the form of sponsees. You know, like when I was, I guess, 3 years sober or so, like, there were, like, all of a sudden 3 new people that I was sponsoring, and I had to focus on them instead of focusing on myself and graduating from college and all these big important things. And then later, you know, I got married, and a new person came into my life then, and I was not allowed to just focus on being married and try to do all that, and I had somebody else that was calling me, and, you know, I couldn't just focus on myself, and you know, and I haven't kept, people haven't stayed with me, like, people that I've sponsored have either gone on to other sponsors or drank, or gone on to other meetings, you know, and stayed sober, but just felt like they found something better in another type of meeting. But what I have understood and what I do understand is that it's helped me, whether or not I've helped them, you know, it's helped me. And I like what, you know, Lois told Bill when he was working with others in his first 6 months, and people kept getting drunk that he was trying to help. And he was like, this isn't working, you know, this is terrible, everybody's getting drunk. And she said, you haven't gotten drunk, you know. And I really like that. But it has been hard because I get really attached. You know, my defects of character come out, whether with this relationship with somebody I'm sponsoring, just like any other relationship, and I get attached to people, and if they think, oh, I don't want your help anymore, or, you know, thanks, but no thanks, or, you know, I can take it personally and have my ego bruised about that, and that's challenging at times. But, you know, one thing is, when I'm working with another alcoholic, I feel like I'm safer from taking a drink. I'm in a safe place from taking a drink. And I have had, you know, some drinking, you know, obsessions with drinking in sobriety. And because of my self-centeredness, I think, and just my problems start piling up. And then, you know, I think, well, I know what's going to fix that, you know. And so actually only in the last year have I been able to be around alcohol. And what in the 10th step it talks about, you know, we will cease fighting anything, even alcohol, you know, and that we'll be placed in a position of neutrality towards alcohol. And that's only come to me in this last year, and I'm not sure why, but it may just be how I've progressed through the steps. And my sponsor isn't like, it's not like the steps are a homework assignment, you know, in my sponsorship, type of sponsorship that I've been raised in AA. It's more like the steps are a part of your life, and, you know, certainly, you know, those formal steps of fourth step and eighth and ninth step where there's a formal or tangible thing, you know, that's done. But, you know, I really like that because I feel like it's something that I've kind of adopted and it's kind of working me as much as I'm working it. But I think because of that and partly because of, you know, my selfishness, it's been really taking a long time for me to stop that idea of, like, alcohol is going to fix this kind of a thing. And I'm really grateful for that. Actually, I went to my 10-year high school reunion in November, and it was at a bar. And I went because a girl that sobered my home group went to high school with me, and I went with her to support her because she works at the school that we went to, and she had to be there. And she has, like, you know, 2 years, 3 years now. And I thought, I'll just go to be of service to her. And I even went to the bar, which is, like, to me, insane. I went up to this bar, and I ordered a hot tea, you know, and I put honey in it, and I felt fine. And I got scared, and I called my sponsor. And I said, you know, I felt really weird because I felt at home at that bar, and I felt safe. And she said, you're safe because of AA and because of God and because of your sobriety, not because you felt comfortable in that bar. That's not a bad thing, you know, where you're at. And also, I think my motives were pure. Like it talks about, you know, check your motives, why you're going someplace. And I was going to be of service to another alcoholic and help her stay sober. So, you know, I feel like that's really helpful to me. And I'm sorry I'm jumping around, but that's sort of how I think. But, I have not kept myself sober. I know on my own that I would drink, you know, because, like I said, I know what makes that pain go away. And it worked for me. It didn't stop working for me. I got crazier and crazier, and it didn't happen exactly the way I wanted it to, but every time I drank, I had that, you know, sense of, you know, of relief. And I don't doubt that it would feel the same way today, but I wouldn't trade this way of life for 3 seconds of, you know, because AA works the same way for me as alcohol, you know, coming to a meeting and sitting in my meeting and halfway through the meeting I sit a little deeper in my chair and I just do that same you know? And it takes longer. I think that's the hard part of conveying to the newcomers that this doesn't work as fast as a couple shots, you know? But it works. It works better and it lasts, you know? And, you know, I think of that song, like Whitney Houston's song, like, they can't take away my dignity. It's like, they can't take this away from me, you know? Like, I can lose material things. I can lose relationships. I can lose anything that's tangible, you know, in my life. But nobody can take this away from me unless, as long as I'm doing a certain, as I'm following this path. And I have no idea what time it is. Can I ask you what time it is? Oh, thanks. Oh, no, it's not your fault. Oh, okay, cool. So you guys can listen. Okay. So I would sell myself short, you know, like I said, like I was at, I'm less than, and thinking that, you know, I'm better than really in my head, but living my life like I wouldn't go for things that I think are, you know, are challenging or that I'm not going to be the best at. Like, if I'm not the best at something, I won't even try it, you know. And AA has given me this kind of, almost like this blanket, you know, that I can try things and I can go for, you know, things that might not be feasible, you know, in the reality, like in the normal world, you know, wouldn't make sense. But I think that's happened to me several times, and I'll just mention a couple things. But, you know, whenever I doubt that God has got me, God has me, you know, then I can just look back at my own experience, which I also think is hard to convey to a newcomer. It's like, because they don't have that sober experience to look back on and say, it worked out. See, worked out, you know. So I always feel like you have to take that leap of faith at first, and just trust that it worked out for us. Why wouldn't it work out for you, you know? And I was working, one such experience is I was working for a family business, and it was a great job. It was so cushy. It was like a handout. You know, I felt like it was a handout because my brother was the CEO. It's not a company anymore, so was the CEO, and you know, I felt like it wasn't really something that I had to work for. You know, it was easy, and I like easy. You know, I got to go to New York and take like a 2-week paid vacation to study art, which is what I really love, and you know, it was a great job. But anyway, I got laid off from that job. And, you know, my brother signed the layoff slip, you know, so I felt like, whoa, what the, you know, how could he do that, you know? And but that was, like, supposedly this really bad thing, right? But without that, I wouldn't have, you know, gone back to school. So I did eventually go back to school, and I got a degree in something I had no desire to do, which is education. And, but I thought, why not, you know, what's the harm, you know, and then I was working in a school, interning as, like, a first grade teacher, and I did, you know, I was an artist, you know, like, I had, like, a degree in fine art, and I, you know, whatever, you know, but here I am as first grade teacher. It's cool, you know, it's good, and, I'm graduating from my program, and the art teacher at the school is moving, and at the school that I worked at for 2 years. And so I know the principal, and I went to her and I said, you know, if this art position is open, I would like to apply for it, you know. And that is not, that is not right, you know. Like, that just doesn't happen. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, it's like you can't draw a straight line from here to there, I feel like, in a lot of things like that in my sobriety. And she was like, yeah, it's yours, you know. And it was like, if I hadn't gotten laid off from that job, I wouldn't be teaching art, which is something that I love today, you know, and that kind of stuff. And I have had a hard time applying these principles with my family, you know, especially with that sister I told you about that I wanted to be just like. And she got cancer a couple years ago, and I felt terrible because I hadn't made amends to her yet. You know, I hadn't made face-to-face amends to her, and I just felt like, you know, I didn't have a good relationship with her, and here she has cancer, you know, and what's going to happen, you know, there. And, you know, and I just did a few things, you know. Again, it's like, I think it has to be this big dramatic thing, like, I'm so sorry I was born and breathing and, you know, that I got in your way, you know, and it's just like, people don't, you know, you know, my sponsor, thank God, was there to just be like, just do those little things. Like, go to her chemotherapy with her. You know, I made her a blanket. I mean, just little things, you know, that I don't know if it meant what it meant to her, but to me, it made me feel like enough. I was enough, you know, like I was enough. I was able to participate, good, bad, or indifferent, you know. And I had a resentment against her because my parents just gave her everything, you know. She got divorced, and my mom gave her all these diamond rings, and then, you know, now she has cancer. Everybody feels sorry for her, and I'm jealous of her, you know. And my sponsor's like, do you want her life? You know, like, please, you're crazy, you know. And I would just think, okay, you know, you're right. So I prayed for her. God, please give her everything. Like it tells in one of the stories in the back. Give her everything I would want for myself, please. You know, and I would say it, you know, like, give her a good man and a good family and have children and a good life. And everything that I wanted, I literally would spell out, you know, in this prayer. And, you know, and I prayed it, and I kept praying that prayer. And I tell her that, you know, that it's my fault, you know, that she has this great life. No, I told her, I said, you know, I always would pray that you know, she ended up getting married and now she's pregnant and, you know, and she's like, it's your fault, ha, you know, and it's like this joke. But, you know, in my heart, I really think, like, it doesn't matter, like, if I'm jealous or resentful or whatever. What matters is what I do, you know, like, I think that's why, you know, I have to say that prayer, you know, because I have to take an action. And going to the person and telling them that I think they're an asshole is not the action to take, you know. And I learned that, too, you know. And, you know, we had this baby shower for her yesterday. And, you know, and I'm so grateful for AA. And, you know, and I also recently joined Al-Anon because of my... because I'm a double winner, you know, and I needed that program also. But, you know, my sponsor, I wasn't able to talk to her before this baby shower for my sister, but she left me this message before the shower, and she just said, you know, Fran, remember that, you know, you're okay, and that you don't have to compare yourself to anybody else, and, you know, if she's having a baby and you're not, or whatever, you know, just be happy, you know, for her, and know that you will have everything that you're supposed to have, you know. Because I start thinking, like, well, I'll be happy when this happens, or that happens, or I can buy the house or the garage, or have the kids, and, you know, I'll be happy when, and I just listened to that message right before the shower, which really helped just focus me, you know, and when in doubt, do the dishes. That's what I tell people. Like, when you're with people in your context, do the dishes, you know, like, be of service. And AA has taught me that. Just get out of yourself and do something, you know. And I did a lot of dishes yesterday. I was telling Ashley on the way up, I washed dishes for like 3 hours. Because there were like 90 people at the shower. It was really crazy. But, you know, I left there and I felt, you know, I felt whole. And that's not something that I would have thought I wanted, you know, before I came in here. I just wanted to stop hurting. I just wanted to stop, you know, drinking. I didn't know that I could feel complete, you know, on the inside, not like on the outside circumstances. And I married another member of AA, and you know, we have a really good relationship. We have a real marriage. We have a real marriage, you know, it's reality, and we don't always get along, but, you know, he has his sponsor, you know, and I have my sponsor, and even though, you know, we might disagree on something, you know, we can still be agreeable in our relationship with one another, and an example of that is that he just bought a Harley, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I was not about that. Because I wanted to have a baby, but that's his baby, so he wanted to have a Harley. And so again, I'm really grateful for my sponsor, because what I want to say, you know, is da 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 da. But what I end up saying is, oh, that's great, you know. And she told me, you know, be nice. These are the kind of directions I have today. I used to have my sponsor used to give me the direction, have fun. And that sounds like an easy thing to do, right? No, it was not easy for me. And now my direction, like, recently is, be nice. Because my sponsor knows me really well. You know, she's listened to that 4-step, and she's been my sponsor now for 8 years, and she knows how I tick. You know, if you can't be supportive, be nice. You know, and it felt good to be nice. It really did, you know, like when he was sharing about his enthusiasm about getting this motorcycle and how great it is. And even though in my head I'm thinking, like, you're going to die, you're going to have a brain injury, or, oh my gosh, you know, some crazy bimbo is going to want to get on the back of your bike or something, you know, like, and you're going to, I'm in a fair, you know, like, I just think all these, like, whoa, you know, and I end up, like, under, you know, in the mire, and that's not what's really happening right here in reality. And it felt really good to be nice to him. And I started even being supportive, you know, like, oh, that's, you know, yeah, that's great, you know, congratulations, good for you. And but that alcoholic, you know, thinking is still there, and I want mine, and what about me? And, you know, it creeps in there, and I don't know. It's really, it's a miracle. A friend of ours says, you know, just get married and you'll start meditating, you know, because you can't say what you really want to say. And today I did say something I shouldn't have said, but, you know, I know that I can always use that 10 step, you know, come in. And I'm not perfect, you know, and I have a lot of fears and of the future. And, you know, where I got sober, people used to always say, like, oh, you're so lucky you got sober young, and you have your whole life ahead of you. And I would think, I'm going to kill myself. Like, I don't want to have my whole life ahead of me. I want to be done with it already. You know, you don't understand that pressure. And, but what I know today is that if I can apply these principles in my life and just come to the meeting and just call my sponsor, even when I think, I don't need to talk to her, I know what she's going to say, or, you know, she's busy and she doesn't need me to bother her. And, you know, if I just do it anyway, no matter how I feel, you know, then I probably will have a good life. I definitely will have a better life than I would have had if I had continued to drink. And I know a friend of mine that got sober before me, and she is not an alcoholic any longer, and, you know, just out there living. And I'm really sad for her, you know, because she called, somebody was saying, you know, she calls, and she calls because she misses her AA friends, you know, because we're really cool, you know. And I think mostly it's like we're really real, you know. It's like I never had that before. I never had that type of relationship with, especially a woman, where I feel like I'm an equal and I don't have to compete against them for anything, and just feel like at one, our friend Maureen, we do a dinner at her house every Tuesday. It's a vegetarian dinner, so we call it Veggie Chicks. You know, it's all women, and the guys start trying to compete, and they have the meat. I forget what it was, meat men dinner. But anyway, you know, that's the kind of stuff that gets me through the day. You know, like when I'm having a day at work where I'm just like want to strangle this child because they are not listening, or you know, just you know, feeling like, you know, is this all I am ever going to be, an art teacher, like feeling less than, and just, I just know that I'm going to go to that meeting, I'm going to go to Mo's house, and, you know, we're going to eat some tofu, you know, even though I hate that stuff, you know, I'll try anything, you know, and it's like, it's great, you know, it's great. And I had a barbecue for Memorial Day at my husband and my townhouse, and my parents came, and, you know, and all our AA friends were there, and 40 people there. You know, and these are like really friends, like not just acquaintances, you know. And my mom and dad, my mom kept saying like, wow, you really had a great party the other day. And I'm just thinking like, you have no idea, you know. And my parents are friends with people that they grew up with, you know. They've been friends with people for like 40-some years, but I never kept a friend. You know, I did not come into AA with any friends, you know. And now I have had friends for 9 years, 8 years, almost 10, you know. And it's like, it's such a gift, you know. And so, you know, if you're new or even if you're not new, you know, because I think sometimes that suffering alcoholic might be somebody that's been around AA, in AA for a while. But, you know, my friend the other day was leading a meeting, but feels like they've been sober for such amount of time and they shouldn't feel the way that they feel. So they don't want to tell people about it because they don't want to, you know, discourage anyone or, you know, or look bad or whatever. But, you know, I can only share my experience, strength, and hope. And if my experience that day was that I had a crappy day and I didn't want to come to the meeting, but I came anyway, you know, like, I can be real, you know, it's okay here, you know. And I don't have to live, I don't have to be Francis the Fibber, you know, anymore. You know, I can be honest and, you know, I shared the other day at the meeting, and And my sponsor came up to me afterwards and said, "How you doing?" And I was like, "I'm honest. That's how I'm doing, you know." And that's good, bad, or indifferent, you know. And most days it's good, you know. And the days that it's not good, it'll get better. And it has. You know, it has gotten better, progressively gotten better, just like my drinking got progressively worse. You know, sobriety has gotten progressively better. And, you know, and I don't really have, I feel really indebted, you know, to my higher power, and I feel really connected with God. But I don't spend enough time, you know. And just like any relationship, you know, it requires time, you know. It's like in the morning, you know, sitting down and just giving that time to God. And it's hard for me. I really just want to be like, what? I'm going to be late, or, you know, I need that, whatever, cup of coffee. And you know, and I have struggles with that. But in sobriety, the more pain I'm in, you know, the more I pray, you know. And so it's like, last year I sprained my wrist, and then I sprained my other wrist, and then I sprained my ankle. And then my other ankle gave out because I was favoring that. And I was like, every appendage, you know, my friends would joke, "How are your appendages doing today?" You know, because I was just in pain, and it lasted for like forever, it seemed, you know, like a year, and I was in pain, and poor me, and my sponsor would be like, "Go get another pigeon. Go sponsor someone. You have to get out of yourself." And I was thinking, no, I need to get better, and then I can go help somebody else. You know, but in AA, it's backwards, you know. You have to help somebody else, and then you get better. And that's really been true for me. And you know, I don't know what's good for me or what's bad for me. I thought that was terrible. You know, here I am, this artist, this art teacher, and I can't use my hands. You know, like, and my sponsor's like, I don't know what God's going to do with that one. You know, but I was more praying more and meditating more then, you know, than I am today, where I'm doing better, you know. So it's like, well, what's better? And so, like, the seemingly bad, you know, just like my bottom and my drinking, seemingly bad, but, you know, results in my coming to AA. That's the best thing that ever happened to me. So, you know, I don't need to judge what happens. You know, I do, but I don't need to. I shouldn't. But I'm going to end because we got a couple more minutes to close the meeting. And thank you so much for asking me to come out. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for listening.